I'm going to begin, in fact half the time, will be on a comparison between the Quran and the Jewish scriptures. I'm not going to go into it thoroughly because that's not my topic, and I haven't offered you anything in the handout in regard to this. It's all up here, of course, therefore it's all on the website if you want it later, and so on. A thorough comparison between the Hebrew Bible and the Quran is beyond the scope of this retreat. But some basic points need to be made. For only a renewed respect among the three so-called Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, can put an end to the practice by interested parties of putting a religious face on the political, social, and economic conflicts that divide our world. There are many parallels in the way God is portrayed in the Hebrew scriptures and in the Quran. Comparisons can be made between the tribal conditions of ancient Israel and the tribal conditions of 7th century Arabia. Violence was endemic to both cultures. Furthermore, Judaism and Islam have a similar structure as religions. This is not surprising when we see Muhammad's familiarity with Jewish writings. Both religions have a prophet, Moses, Muhammad. Both religions have a sacred text, the Torah, the Quran. And both religions recognize our human obligations to believe and to submit to the will of God as revealed through the prophets, the messengers sent by God. There's a little diagram to make the same point. Judaism, the prophet Moses. Islam, the prophet Muhammad. Judaism, the book, the Torah. Islam, the book, the Quran. And Judaism, obedience. Doing the will of God is absolutely basic to the Old Testament scriptures. And in the case of Islam, Islam itself means submission to God's will. Muhammad's acquaintance with the Jewish scriptures becomes obvious when we note that there are 114 surahs, sections, of the Quran, and in 46 of them, so almost half, there are references to stories from the Jewish scriptures and legends. Now, that statement that I've made, I can stand by it, and it's not a very unclear statement, I hope. But please, you'll have to keep in mind all the time, that's not how a Muslim would describe it. Because we've had a century and more of study in the Jewish Old Testament scriptures and in the New Testament scriptures, we've come to a scientifically pretty obvious place to come to, whereby we're very conscious of the human author. We want to know when this document was written. Who wrote it? Was it written by someone in the priesthood? Was it written by a farmer? Was it written by someone in the king's court? Because that's going to make a big difference to the way it's shaped. Is it written by the Deuteronomists? Is it written by the priestly group? And I could go on and on, and you don't want me to, and I don't want to either. But it's that we ask that precise question. And when we come to the New Testament, we ask the same. Paul wrote it. When did he write it? Who did he write it to? What were the questions they were asking when he wrote it? What's he trying to deal with? So it's a scientific, historical, literary question that's obvious to us. The book of Revelations, when was it written, etc., etc., etc. Who was James that wrote the letter to James? Was it this James or another James? And there's libraries written on it and scholarship entered, enormous amount of scholarship. in the Muslim world, what Muhammad was familiar with or not familiar with is irrelevant. Muhammad is not the author of the Quran. This is their view. The Quran comes directly from God, given through the angel Gabriel to Muhammad in a trance or a prayer event or a revelation. And he is simply the medium to give voice to it. And those who heard it and were impressed by it or remembered it later, as we saw last night, we find it in the Quran. So the Quran for them is directly God's final revelation. Direct, dictated, straight through. And Muhammad is irrelevant to it. He doesn't add to it, he doesn't subtract to it. His view of the world is not found in it. This is God's view of the world. Am I being clear? Because I better be, because it'll have to come. It's a vital point. I'm writing in the normal way. I've asked you, I've talked about Muhammad's acquaintance with the Jewish scriptures. Well, that's one way of putting it, and I think a reasonably sensible way. But it's not the approach of a Muslim scholar. There are almost entirely the stories that are found, the links between the Jewish scriptures and the Quran, they come almost entirely from the narratives about creation, the patriarchs, and Moses. It's not evident from the Quran that Muhammad was familiar with the writings of the Israelite prophets or the wisdom literature. He does mention the Psalms three times, but it's not evident that he was familiar with their content. Before detailing the references to Jewish literature found in the Quran, and I've already told you there are many of them, it's important to observe this distinction. For the most part, the stories as we find them in the Hebrew scriptures are the fruit of hundreds of years of storytelling, oral tradition, over centuries. Like every culture, it's a storytelling culture. There's no writing at first. So the stories are handed on from generation to generation, orally. In the Quran, and I'm going to look at one story, a stunningly beautiful story with you in about 3 minutes to show that. They're quite disarming, they're quite brilliant, the stories of the Bible, if I may say so. They're quite nuanced and clearly intelligent and wonderful literature. In the Quran, the stories are not retold. Rather, they're referred to. So while it refers to Adam and Eve, it doesn't actually tell you the story of Adam and Eve. It's taken as known. They're referred to in order to make a point, either as witnessing to the power and compassion of God, or, and this is frequently the case, as we'll see when we go through the surahs, a warning to submit to the revelation God is now giving through Muhammad. Now that's how I would express it. A Muslim wouldn't put it that way. They would say God has already revealed the stories to Moses, and there they are. Doesn't need to reveal them again. What God is doing through Muhammad is reminding us of the stories, which they do, and warning us to take them seriously or else. And we'll see plenty of that. I'll run through this list without comment. God created the universe in 6 days. These are all statements you find in the Quran. They come, well, I'm saying they come directly from the Jewish scriptures. They would say they're coming directly from God to Muhammad. Creation of the human race is mentioned. The fall of Adam and Eve is mentioned in the Quran. Conflict between the sons of Adam, Noah and the flood, and that's one of favourite text that keeps coming back, because Noah and the flood was really a warning. Muhammad says, if you don't believe me, you'll be wiped out. You've got to accept the revelation that God has given through me, and that, then you'll be one of the ones saved the way Noah was saved. Abraham is mentioned, obviously. Lot is saved by God when the cities of the Dead Sea are destroyed. And in the surahs, you'll find the Quran warns us, if you don't listen to what God is now saying to you through Muhammad, this final revelation, if you don't listen to that, you'll be destroyed the way the cities of Gomorrah and Sodom were destroyed. From the book of Exodus, Moses' confrontation with the Pharaoh of Egypt. And I don't have to tell you, if you looked up those surahs, you'd see it. The Quran likens Muhammad to Moses, and the pagan tribes, the Jews and the Christians who weren't listening to Muhammad, he likens them to the pharaohs of Egypt. And the plagues that happened in Egypt are going to happen in their place if they don't listen to Muhammad. Plagues of Egypt, one of his favourites, the crossing of the Red Sea, the giving of the Torah, the worship of a golden calf, once again. The Christians are worshipping golden calves, the Jews are worshipping golden calves in their behaviour, and the pagan Arabians are doing it. So they've got to come and listen to what God is finally revealing to save us. 70 men given the gift of prophecy, Moses striking the rock, manna from heaven. Muhammad sees the refusal of the Jews to accept him as a prophet as analogous to the refusal of the Israelites to believe in Moses and the revelation God made through him. Then there are references, this is a complete list I'm giving you here, that are not found in the Torah but to other books. Story of doesn't repeat the story, but he mentions Elijah, Elisha, David, of course, Queen of Sheba, Solomon, Job, Jonah, and Ezra. So many, many, many references to the Torah and the other writings of the Jewish scriptures. The Hebrew scriptures present God as making a special covenant with Abraham and choosing to overturn cultural expectations by achieving God's purpose, not through his firstborn son Ishmael, but through his second son Isaac. This is critical to the Jewish scriptures. God is free. God isn't tied in with our systems. The firstborn should inherit. No, in this case it's the secondborn that inherits and not the first, because God is free to do that according to the Jewish scriptures. And Ishmael, of course, is the founder of the Arab peoples, and Isaac is the founder, as they see it, of the Jewish people. They also speak of the covenant made with Noah, in which God expresses God's commitment to all the peoples of the earth. Abram was the father of Ishmael and Isaac. The people of Israel came from the blessing given by God, and you know the story, I'm sure I won't go through this story, but I'll go through one shortly, the blessing given to Isaac. And you know how that was tricked? The whole stories of that. The Arab peoples come from the blessing given by God through Ishmael. A careful reading of the Hebrew scriptures clearly shows, this is quite beautiful, they're beautiful stories, shows that God's choice of Isaac did not involve a rejection of Ishmael. I'm underlining that, that's my key point in this first part of our presentation. Choosing Isaac did not mean the rejection of Ishmael. Abram never rejected Ishmael, nor did God. On the contrary, God blessed Ishmael in a special way. This is critically important when we examine the often fraught relationship between Judaism and Islam. So it's worth underlining the point by examining the biblical narrative as found in the book of Genesis. So what I'm asking of you now is a kind of a complete attention, because there are subtleties in this story that are maybe not obvious at first reading, but I hope I can make them obvious, because they're all there in the actual account. Unable to conceive, Sarah gives her servant Hagar to Abram. But she's envious of Hagar when she conceives and deals harshly with her. Hagar runs away. That's in Genesis 16. The angel of the Lord, we're told, appeared to Hagar and told her to go back, but added, quote from Genesis 16, "I will so greatly multiply your offspring that they cannot be counted. Now you've conceived and shall bear a son, and you'll call him Ishmael, for the Lord has given heed to your affliction." There are echoes here, which you've already picked up, of the promise made earlier to Abraham. God said to Abraham, "Look toward heaven and count the stars, so shall your descendants be." We're told that the place of the encounter was called Bir Lahai Roi. Bir, well, Lahai, life, and Roi, to see. It's the well of the one who lives and sees. That's the location, and it'll come back in the story. Hagar was seen by and saw the Lord and lived. This place will appear again later in the story. When God promised Abraham that Sarah would bear him a son, Abraham made this plea, and it's found in the Jewish story. "Oh, that Ishmael would live in your sight." God replied, "As for Ishmael, I've heard you. I'll bless him and make him fruitful and exceedingly numerous. He shall be the father of 12 princes. I'll make him a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac." The 12 princes parallel the 12 sons of Jacob. There's an echo here of God's first words to Abraham. Quote, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I'll show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I'll bless you and make your name great so that you'll be a blessing. I'll bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Later in this story, Abram had a feast to celebrate the weaning of Isaac. Ishmael joined in the celebration, and Ishmael was laughing, playing with, and laughing with baby Isaac. Isaac, by the way, means laughing. There's a lot of words. The mother laughed when she was told she was going to become pregnant, and so on. So here it is again. Once again, Sarah's bitterness shows, and the demands that Abraham banish Hagar and Ishmael. Abraham, we're told, was greatly distressed, but God tells him to do as Sarah commanded. And Hagar, we're told, wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the story goes on. When the water in the skin was gone, she, that's Hagar, cast the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him, a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, "Do not let me look on the death of the child. And as Hagar sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And we're told, Genesis 21, God heard the voice of the boy, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Come, lift up the boy, hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him." Brackets. I'm sure you're aware the nation is the nation of the Arab peoples. Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy and he grew up and lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother got a wife for him from the land of Egypt. When God had chosen Isaac for a special purpose, that's true, God's love for Ishmael is clear, as is Abraham's. There's no hatred here. Isaac's mother is a problem, clearly. After Sarah's death and burial, Abraham sends his servant off to find a wife for Isaac from his own kin. We're told that, quote, Isaac had come from Beer Lahai Roy. Remember that? That's the place where God appeared to Hagar in the wilderness. So what's Isaac doing coming from there? Isaac had come from Beer Lahai Roy and was settled in the Negev. In Genesis 16, Beer Lahai Roy is associated with Hagar. Is there a hint here that Sarah's death has opened up an opportunity for reconciliation between Abram and Hagar? This suspicion is reinforced by the fact that in the narrative, Ishmael and Isaac stand together at their father's burial. Furthermore, after Abraham's death, Isaac returns to Beer Lahai Roy and settles there. And finally, just before recording Abraham's death, the Genesis story writes, Abraham took another wife, whose name was Keturah. She bore him, and there's a list of the children, Jokshan was the father of Sheba and Dedan, and the sons of Dedan were Ashurim, etc. The sons of Midian were Ephi, etc. All these were children of Keturah by Abraham. Abraham is being presented there as the father of many nations. It's interesting that in an early rabbinic suggestion is that Keturah is actually Hagar, called Keturah because, to quote from the Jewish scripture or writings, because her acts were as fragrant as incense, Keturet. So at least some of the Jewish scholars, searching the scriptures for meanings, thought, hello, this is actually Hagar, back with Abraham. Hagar, the mother of Ishmael and of the Arab peoples. What's important, and I hope I've done it as well as I can, it's important to note that the Hebrew text, while asserting God's choice of Isaac for a special mission, I haven't gone into that because it's so obvious to you all and basic, speaks with moving affection of Hagar. and Abram's firstborn son Ishmael, and so speaks with affection of the Arab peoples. So that's all I intend doing on a comparison between the Quran and the Old Testament scriptures. It's very thin, but I hope I've made some important points there. Now we come to our topic, introducing it. The Quran and the Christian New Testament. Reference to the Christian scriptures is far less frequent than reference to the Hebrew scriptures. The Quran refers to the story of Zechariah and John once. It knows of the Virgin Mary and the miraculous conception of Jesus. However, it's only in the concluding verses of Surah 5 does the Quran refer to scenes from the public ministry of Jesus, namely the healing of the man who was born blind, the healing of the leper, and the raising of the dead, and the multiplication of the loaves. The Quran claims that Jesus foretold the coming of Muhammad. And this is straight out of the Quran now. Surah 61. When Jesus, son of Mary, said, O children of Israel, truly I am the messenger of God to you, confirming that which came before me in the Torah, and bearing glad tidings of a messenger to come after me, whose name is Ahmad, which means more praiseworthy in English, and is, of course, another name for Muhammad. So that's what the Quran claims. So we've got to look at this at two levels. That's what Muhammad thinks or claims, or to go more profoundly, this is what God is revealing through Muhammad, that Jesus actually foretold the coming of Muhammad. Now, if we look at the New Testament, Jesus did see himself as a messenger from God, certainly, and he saw himself as fulfilling the Torah, yes. Quote, do not think that I've come to abolish the Torah, all the prophets. I've come not to abolish them, but to bring them to their fullness, to bring them to their completion. Matthew chapter 5. Jesus also spoke, yes, of the coming of the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name. You know that from John chapter 14. However, according to the New Testament, Jesus did not speak of the Spirit as Ahmad, a name which enables some Muslims to identify the Spirit promised by Jesus with Muhammad. The Quran claims to bring to perfection the religion of Abraham, which God revealed to Moses and then to Jesus. Quote from Surah 61, God sent his messenger with guidance and the religion of truth to make it prevail over all religion. It's Islam. Muslims honour Jesus as a prophet, chosen by God to follow Moses and to prepare for Muhammad. However,